and welcome to All Crime, No Cattle, a Texas true crime podcast. I'm Erin, that's Shay, and I feel like I can speak for all of the listeners around the world when I say we are tired of me prattling on for three whole episodes straight. We are ready for a Shay-hosted episode.
Yeah, maybe it'll be a fun episode. I'm hoping it'll be a change of pace.
I hope so. I'm just glad I'm not the one doing it.
I bet you are. Well, I've been wanting to cover this story for some time. It came to my attention over a year ago when we first started planning the podcast, and I think this is the perfect time to fit it into our schedule. After the past three episodes, I think we're due for something a little different. So this week, we will be covering a case which includes more types of local, state, national, and even international investigative bodies than any other true crime case that I've ever heard of. We will also be traveling from North Central Texas to the West Texas city that has been in the national spotlight recently. I think you know the one. And we'll even get to take a trip abroad to Central America. So sit back, relax, crack open a Shiner Bock while I take you through the wild ride of episode 45, Disappearance in the Desert. So let's clear out some sources, shall we? First off, a major source for this case is the Dallas Observer article, Death in the Desert, that was published October of 2000 by Carlton Stowers. Next up, we have Crime Stories from the ID channel, and that's the episode Interview with the Devil, and that aired on December 4th, 2007. We also used a series of local papers, including The Facts from Clute, Texas in 1998, and The Kerrville Times in August 1998 by Edmund England, The Waco Tribune Herald from February 2016 by Nancy Grayson, Odessa American Online, published August 1998 by Charles Langdon, and I also use the website for Bill Johnson's law office. We're going to talk about Bill Johnson a little bit in this episode. I also use findagrave.com, of course. So let's get into our story. Today, we're going to begin back in mid-April of 1997 at the offices of Brazos Environmental and Engineering Services in Waco, Texas. This Texas consulting firm was busy as usual that day when in walked a real estate developer looking to hire their services for a large modular home community in Florida. The man said his name was Ned Wright. He was tan, somewhere in his late 40s and early 50s. He was average height and build, with a decent amount of gray beginning to appear in his hair. The businessman explained he needed their services to plan a portion of the development. He gave specifics about the location, the bank that they were planning to finance the deal through, permits that they had already procured, etc. Ned Wright said the deal needed to stay hush-hush. He couldn't give the name of his Fortune 500 company because he promised to keep this all kind of quiet because of regional developments that were going on in the area. But he did insist that this deal promised to be very lucrative. When pressed on why he had an interest in Brazos Environmental, he explained that he and his partner had heard very good things about the Central Texas firm. The firm's executives met and decided to pursue Mr. Wright's proposal. The man then requested to look over the resumes of all Brazos Environmental employees to meet everyone in the office because, quote, "I'd like to shake a man's hand and look at him in the eye before I hire him."
Okay, so right now we have a man who is not identifying the company he works for, but he's trying to go through all of these business contracts with this other entity.
Yeah, he's basically pitching them an idea. It seems like a really great idea, and he's really kind of forcing their hand to give him carte blanche to do whatever he wants in the office.
Sounds shady.
It does. The firm did comply, though, with both requests, and they let him look over the resumes, and then once he was done, they led him around the office with an engineer to meet all the employees. The Florida businessman didn't seem to favor anyone or linger too long after introductions, until he stopped at Gary Patterson's desk. Gary was a 30-year-old draftsman and a part of the lower-level technical staff. Ned Wright did not look at Gary's resume beforehand, since Gary didn't even have one on file with the firm. So obviously it was a little weird and surprising that the real estate developer seemed extremely interested with just a simple draftsman. Weird, right?
Yeah, that seems weird. Did Gary have, like, cool desk toys?
No. No, he was pretty plain.
Okay. So he's just, for whatever reason, has taken an interest just in this guy.
Yeah. And a lot of people pointed out that of everyone in the office that you could have stopped at and really had a long conversation with, why Gary?
Yeah. And is Gary there?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's talking to Gary now.
Yeah. So Gary's there. He introduces himself and they begin this conversation that ends up lasting a little while. Ned went so far as even to take down Gary's contact information and told him they would be in touch. Just a few days later, word began to spread around Brazos Environmental that Ned Wright's deal didn't go through. The financier wanted to hire a larger team through a bigger firm, unfortunately. But, according to the phone records and interviews obtained via the Dallas Observer, Ned Wright did call Gary back at his office and his home. In those calls, he expressed how impressed he had been with Gary and that he and his partner wanted him to fly out to the development site in Florida to have a look at the project for himself.
That is so weird.
Right?
Yeah. Either Ned has a thing for Gary or Ned is about to murder Gary. Those are the only two options.
You think Ned has the hots for Gary?
Yes.
It does seem over the top.
Yeah.
Well, Ned thought Gary might be interested in a potential job opening with their company that had advancement potential. Gary Patterson, a recent divorced father with some debt issues, knew his current position at Brazos Environmental didn't have any room for advancement, so he jumped at the chance. This seemed like everything he needed, a job with more responsibility, a higher salary, and better benefits. Besides, Gary figured he could bring his new girlfriend with him down to sunny Florida and make a small vacation out of the interview. When Gary Patterson mentioned this to Ned Wright, he responded that it probably wouldn't be a good idea. Their company would pay for the flight and hotel, but wanted it to be sort of an in-and-out interview situation. Ned told Gary he would contact him soon with more details and hung up the phone. So immediately, there seems to be like an issue with him bringing his girlfriend, but he's going to call him back. When Gary heard from Ned Wright again, the Florida interview had been changed. Ned explained to Gary that everything was too busy at the Florida offices and the interview would have to take place in El Paso, where they were working on another development. Ned also added this change was actually really fortunate and it would speed up his hiring process. He went on to tell Gary that he and his partner had already informally decided to go ahead and hire him, and they just needed to put it all down on paper. Once they were done in El Paso, they could even authorize his signing bonus, a brand new Chevrolet Suburban company car. If Gary wanted, he could take it back with him to Waco to sort out his relocation details if he desired. The two men met for lunch the next day, and it ended with Ned handing Gary $400 bills to purchase his airline ticket to El Paso. Gary went back to the office, and he told a few of his closest friends about the opportunity. Gary also told his girlfriend and phoned his father, telling them both all the details.
Okay, sorry, red flag city, because why wouldn't that be charged to the company's credit card? Why is he giving him cash for him to go ahead and purchase these plane tickets?
Yeah.
There is something super freaky going on here.
Yeah, and it's 1997. Maybe if it was the 60s or 70s, I could see like a cash handing over to buy a plane ticket. Why wouldn't they just hand him the tickets?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's something that the company would arrange or pay for with a credit card, like I said.
Yeah. So that there would be a record so that they could write it off.
Yeah. This is very weird.
Although his friends and girlfriend were very excited for him, Gary's father, D.C. Patterson, told him, quote, "Be careful. Don't give them any money. It sounds like a scam to me." Gary told his father, "Dad, if I don't go check this out, I'll always wonder what I turned down." In the early hours of Saturday, May 3rd, 1997, Gary told his young daughter, Crystal, goodbye as he dropped her off with his parents and headed for the airport. At 7:30 a.m., he boarded an American Eagle flight from Waco to El Paso. Gary's plane landed just around 12 p.m. Central Standard Time, and he made a quick call to his parents to let them know that he had arrived safely. This would be the last time anyone would hear from Gary Patterson. As far as Gary's parents knew, his plan had been to do an interview later that afternoon and then return to Waco the following day, pick up Crystal, go back home. Gary didn't return to town on Sunday, however. He didn't even call, which was not something he would have done. Gary, by all accounts, was very reliable, a great employee, and a loving father to his daughter Crystal. His divorce from Crystal's mother, Lisa Urich, had been a very difficult process, and he had fought hard for custody. So Gary's parents almost immediately suspected something was terribly wrong when Gary didn't even call to check in with his daughter. After not hearing from Gary for 48 hours, his parents filed a missing persons report with the Waco Police Department. Immediately, investigators began looking into the potential business trip. They figured locating Ned Wright was their best bet in tracking down Gary. The thing was, Ned Wright did not leave any contact information with Brazos Environmental. No business card, no email, no phone number, nothing. He had always called their offices directly, besides the one in-person visit he made a few months prior. The one lead that they had on tracking down the mysterious Ned Wright was that the secretary of Brazos Environmental had noticed that the man arrived at their offices via a local cab service. Waco, a still-growing Texas city today, at the time only had one cab service. You know the one, Yellow Cab. They operated around half a dozen cabs. Detective Stephen January of the Waco Police Department told Crime Stories that the local cab drivers kept logs detailing where they picked up and dropped off particular fares. After cross-referencing the fare logs from that day, detectives found a fare leaving a hotel in downtown Waco and arriving at Gary's work. Detective January was quickly dispatched to the hotel, and it was the Fairfield Inn and Suites in downtown Waco. There, they were able to look up phone calls being placed out of the hotel on the days that they suspected Ned Wright would likely be in town. Quickly, they discovered one room had placed calls to Brazos Environmental, as well as Gary's home. The calls had all come from room 105. The interesting part was that room 105 had been purchased with cash, and the occupant was required to leave a copy of their driver's license with the front desk. The name of the person on the license was not Ned Wright, but one Theodore Donald Young of Florida. The photo on the driver's license matched up extremely well with the composite created from descriptions of a man described by Brazos Environmental employees. Furthermore, witnesses at Brazos Environmental were able to identify Theodore Donald Young in a photo lineup as the mysterious man they thought was the actual Ned Wright. Theodore Donald Young, who went by Ted, was not a real estate mogul, as he would want you to believe. Shocker, right? In truth, he had a criminal history of fraud as a prolific scam artist. He was also currently on the lam from federal authorities. Bill Johnson, a former assistant U.S. attorney, told Crime Stories that, quote, Ted Young had previously been convicted of a massive fraud scheme worth millions and millions of dollars. I actually looked into this, and it was more around $26 million worth of fraud that he was convicted of in South Carolina back in 1994. I won't get into the details of that case, but you might actually be familiar with Bill Johnson, who prosecuted him, because he has become sort of notorious as being heavily involved with the prosecution of members of the Branch Davidians, and we'll get into that here at the end, because I think it's worth mentioning Bill Johnson's history. So the point of the matter is that Bill Johnson plays a big role in this case because of his role with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the conviction of Ted Young in South Carolina for a massive fraud case. So after Ted Young was sentenced for his role in that crime, he was allowed to voluntarily surrender himself at a later date to serve out his sentence of 52 months in federal prison. The only problem was, is Ted never voluntarily surrendered himself on the agreed upon date in February of 1995. Texas Rangers discovered evidence which led them to believe that he had since fled the country and was likely somewhere along the border. So as Waco PD began discovering the true identity of this Ted Young, they were left to wonder what could cause such a high-profile criminal, a fraudster, to come out of hiding and target a lowly draftsman in Waco, Texas, for another possible scam, fraud, or perhaps something even worse.
Yeah, so this fraud happens. He doesn't turn himself in, so he's kind of on the run. That happened in 1995. And what year was this with Gary Patterson's disappearance?
2 years later in 1997.
Okay, so nobody's heard of this Ted Young guy for two whole years, and then he just pops up, does this weird thing with lying about who he is, and gets Gary Patterson out of Waco and to El Paso.
Correct.
Very weird. Okay.
Yeah, it's really weird. And investigators were asking themselves the same questions that you're asking right now. and I'm sure our listeners are. But at this point, they really had no idea how Ted Young fit into this whole situation. So until Ted Young could be located, they began looking more into Gary's background. As mentioned earlier, Gary loved his daughter Crystal deeply. He and his wife Lisa had divorced in October of 1992, and even though he tried to make the separation work mainly for his daughter's sake, Lisa attempted to flee the state with her daughter in December of 1994. Texas actually considers this a serious offense called parental kidnapping. After months of trying to track down Lisa and Crystal, Gary decided to hire a private investigator named Scott Satimo. Satimo was able to track Lisa's movements across the country as they moved from state to state over the following months. They meandered their way through New Mexico, Nevada, California, and even Alaska. It took about a year and $14,000 before Satimo was able to pinpoint that Lisa had finally settled down in Oregon. In total, she had been on the run with Crystal for almost 2 years. Lisa was eventually apprehended in Oregon and transported back to Waco to face charges for parental kidnapping and interference with child custody. Her sentencing resulted in a complete loss of custody of her daughter, as well as 5 years of probation. I'd like to also add that Lisa's sentencing hearing was held the day before Ned Wright appeared at the offices of Brazos Environmental. Investigators also thought it was particularly odd that 2 days after Gary's disappearance, Lisa had already hired a lawyer. She had begun court filings to reinstate her full custody of Crystal, in effect, taking her away from Gary's parents, who were now in control of Crystal and were right in the middle of trying to find their missing son. However, at that point, there was nothing to tie Lisa Urich to the fraudster Ted Young or anything that could link her to Gary's disappearance. Authorities did bring Lisa in for questioning, though, but she offered no new information on where Gary could be or who Ted Young was. Detectives released her, however, they were suspicious she was hiding something further. Her demeanor during the interrogation was described as cold and markedly unhelpful. So just to keep you apprised of our timeline, this would put us 3 weeks after Gary Patterson's initial disappearance, and Waco PD still really didn't have a whole lot to go on. So next up, detectives turned their focus of the investigation onto Lisa's father, Sam Urich. After conducting several interviews with DC Patterson, detectives began to discover Lisa's father had a shadowy background. Further interviews with associates of Urich's painted a dark picture of this man. He was domineering, aggressive, hot-tempered, and quick to anger. On paper, Sam Urich was a middle-class owner of various get-rich-quick ventures, including insurance companies, several money laundering fronts, and a small trucking company. DC Patterson also told detectives that Gary didn't trust his father-in-law. Throughout this marriage to Lisa, Sam Urich had strong-armed him into being involved in several of his small businesses. One such story was that one day two armed men had arrived at an insurance office that Gary was managing for Urich and demanded to know where they could find his father-in-law. After holding several employees at gunpoint, the men just left. This situation was shocking and scared the crap out of Gary. Shortly after the encounter, his father-in-law, Urich, told Gary he was just going to close the business. Another time, Gary told his father that he accompanied Urich to open an account downtown at the main Waco bank. Urich produced a large briefcase full of money. When the bank manager inquired where all this cash had come from, he became irate and just stormed out of the bank. Gary's father told Crime Stories, quote, "Sam would disappear for 6 months at a time. Nobody knew where he was at. He'd come back a rich man, and he'd throw money every which way." Around this time, Gary told Lisa he had had enough, and he planned to take a position with a real company to get away from her father. Sam Urich was infuriated by this. He threatened his daughter Lisa that if she didn't divorce Gary, he was going to take Crystal away from them and send her somewhere that no one could find her ever again. So remember that PI, Scott Satimo?
Yes.
He discovered something interesting while he was tracking Lisa across the country. He was able to find a paper trail that showed that her father had been funneling her money the entire time, helping her evade authorities. Also, once he heard that Gary had disappeared, strangely, he contacted lead detective Stephen January. He told the detective that during his time tracking down Lisa, he had also kind of followed Sam Urich around. And one day, Sam Urich left his car open and left his day planner on the passenger seat. Well, he took the opportunity and just kind of grabbed it.
Is that legal?
I don't think so. I don't think it is.
Doesn't sound legal.
No. And Detective January kind of erred on the side of caution, and he didn't ask any questions. Like, he was like, I don't want to know how you got it. I don't know why it's in your possession. But if you can go ahead and copy that and fax it over to my office, that'd be great.
Okay.
And the PI did. So once he had this copy and he started looking through it, sifting through it, and it turns out that it wasn't really a day planner. It was a complex index that was not in alphabetical order of over 1,000 names and phone numbers of Sam Urich's contacts. Halfway through this collection of phone numbers, he found the name Ted Young.
Oh.
So there you go. You're starting to see how it's fitting together, right?
Sure.
Well, Detective January at this point decides it's time to call Sam Urich and see if he will come down to the station and answer some questions. He made a call to Urich's trucking business that's based out of Conroe, Texas. That's about 3.5 hours southeast of Waco, Texas. To his surprise, Sam Urich was extremely aggressive and defensive over the phone. January told Crime Stories that, quote, he tried to control the conversation the entire time and even threatened my family. He started talking about my boys. Even,
what?
Yeah, he even knew their names. And at the end, he told me, quote, I've had you checked out. I know how much you love your kids. And he hung up the phone.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So not a smart move, Sam. You're talking to a detective who is only going to be like, oh, okay, is that how we're going to play it? I'm going to look at you even further. I'm not going to just leave this alone. I'm a detective.
Yeah, the Detective January was definitely taken aback by this as well. Like, who responds that way?
Yeah. Talk about proving that you have something to be guilty about.
Well, armed with this information, the Waco Police Department decided to switch up approaches with Sam Urich. Recently, Sergeant Matt Cawthon of the Texas Rangers had heard details of Gary Patterson's case and made a voluntary visit to Waco. Once he was in town, he helped organize and plan a surprise raid on Urich's trucking business down in Conroe. And I love that a Texas Ranger just heard about this story on the radio and was like, well, I'm just a couple hours away. I'll stop in and see if they need any help. And then he becomes a huge pivotal part of this investigation.
He's like the Batman.
Yeah.
The bat signal.
They put the Ranger signal out there.
That's right.
Once they arrived at Sam Urich's business, they only found a shell of a building. The entire place had been completely cleared out of paperwork, vehicles, equipment, tools. There's just nothing in there. In fact, there was little record of the company ever conducting any actual trucking at all. Most notably, on the books, the only thing Texas Rangers could dig up on this company called Southern Sales was long-distance phone calls that often ran as high as $2,000 per month. Most of the numbers were to El Paso and other countries. $2,000 a month in long-distance phone calls. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's big time money, especially if you're not, it doesn't seem like you're doing business. Like, how are you affording $2,000 a month when there's no record of you actually doing business, anything?
It seems like a shell game, right? Like, it's a front.
That's what it seems like, yeah.
Well, Assistant U.S. Attorney Bill Johnston began lending more help to the investigation and contacted a U.S. Marshal from Houston regarding Sam Urich's whereabouts. When Bill Johnston said Sam Urich's name to this U.S. Marshal, the mood of the conversation completely changed.
He's already on their radar, huh?
This U.S. Marshal told Bill Johnston, quote, you don't know who you're dealing with, do you? The Odessa American reported that Sam Urich was a key suspect in an international terrorism investigation called, quote, Operation Circus back in the 1980s. It was highly suspected that Urich, along with two rogue CIA agents, had supplied and transported 4,000 pounds of C4 explosives, weapons, and ammunition to a group of Libyan terrorists.
Damn.
That's who Sam Urich is.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, forensic chemists and explosive experts for Interpol had actually traced that C4 from that sale to the residue found at scenes of terroristic activity across 14 different countries in Europe and parts of Asia. One of the worst attacks was a nightclub bombing in Berlin during 1986, which wounded over 200 victims and killed 9 people, including 2 American military personnel. The terror alert, obviously, went into full effect when everyone at Waco Police Department found out this information.
Wow, that's incredible. And right now, they don't know where he is. He's just in the wind.
Exactly. Wow. He's completely loose. And now Detective January and the other investigators kind of understand why he's trying to strong arm them to get off of this case.
So how did they, I mean, was there nothing to arrest him on, or did they not have their eye on him? I mean, how was he able to just live his life?
The CIA and the FBI tried for years to convict him on this case, and there wasn't enough information. There wasn't enough evidence, and they could never make a sound enough case, but it was highly suspected that Sam Urich was the one that supplied the explosives and the weapons.
Oh, wow.
Well, Detective January and the other investigators, obviously, they begin checking their cars for explosives every morning, you know, looking over their shoulder. Patrols had to be stationed around the city and at their homes to watch for hitman attacks because he was known to hire hitmen. All of which resulted in weeks of stress, sleepless nights, wondering if Sam Urich had finally come to take his vengeance. So 10 long months go by, and the investigation slows to a crawl. Sam Urich and Ted Young stayed off of investigators' radar and appeared to be in hiding, planning their next move, possibly somewhere along the border or abroad. Now, suspecting that Gary Patterson's former father-in-law is connected with his disappearance, Waco Police Department began cooperating intensely with the El Paso authorities to learn more about what happened at this mysterious job interview. Let's talk about El Paso. Let's take a little break from what's been going on in this case, and we'll talk a little bit about El Paso, lighten the mood. We haven't talked about this city. It's one of the biggest cities in Texas. I'm surprised we haven't done a case here. We've got a few on our list, but it just hadn't come up yet. So, for one, Waco is a lot different from El Paso, because it is nestled in the flatlands of the Texas prairie up in north central Texas, while El Paso is one of the oldest cities in Texas out in the desert. Anthropologists argue that the archaeological record shows clear signs of human occupation as far back as 10,000 to 12,000 years ago at El Paso.
Oh.
Not only is it one of the oldest cities in North America, it's also one of the largest in Texas, boasting a population just under that of Fort Worth, at around 700,000 people. And that's not including the international metroplex of El Paso / Juarez, Mexico, its sister city. So kind of like when we talked about Laredo and Nuevo Laredo, we've got an international metropolitan area. If you include that, this would boost the regional population up to 2.7 million, making it the second largest metropolitan area on the U.S.-Mexican border. Most people, even other Texans, may not know that El Paso is known for other things besides the desert. It's actually the home of one of our largest universities here in Texas, University of Texas El Paso. It's also known for a concentration of major military bases, a world-renowned symphony, as well as a ballet company that's won a bunch of awards.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It also has a ton of award-winning museums, theaters, and a celebrated local art community. It's also the birthplace of several famous people in Texas history and Mexico history. Just a couple off the list, a former president of Mexico, Victoriano Huerta, and two astronauts, Patrick G. Forrester and John D. Olivas.
That's pretty incredible.
The last thing I will say is that since 1997, El Paso has ranked in the top three safest, largest cities in America. So you can see how many people view El Paso as the jewel of the West Texas desert.
Hey, ACNC listeners, if you love true crime and getting your dessert on, then you need to check out Serial Killer Suites from San Antonio, Texas. Serial Killer Suites specializes in ginormous gourmet rice cereal treats that are to die for, with incredible flavors like cookies and cream, hot chocolate, peanut butter cup, and unicorn swirl.
Oh my gosh, these things are so tasty. She sent us the peanut butter one, a Nutella surprise one, and a peppermint bark one. They were all delicious. Really good.
My favorite one was the peanut butter cup. It comes with a smooth, creamy, sumptuous peanut butter layer on top. And then when you get into it, there's a peanut butter cup right nestled in there.
Surprise.
We also love the fact that Serial Killer Suites donate 10% of their monthly sales to local area nonprofits, like the Humane Society and Thrive Youth Center, and that they're a proud LGBT-owned business. Now, if you're interested in trying one of the Rice Krispie Beasts, head on over to the website serialkillersweets.com or give them a call at 210-753-2032. Once you place your order, they'll be ready to ship anywhere in the U.S. in just 1 to 2 days.
So do your taste buds a favor and check out Serial Killer Sweets to get your hands on some sinful treats to feed your inner demons. Check out all the deliciousness over at SerialKillerSweets.com, and that's cereal with a C, like the breakfast food.
Experience fuller plates and fuller wallets with Every Plate, America's best value meal kit. Every Plate dinners are the cheaper, healthier alternative to takeout or delivery, and recipes come together in about 30 minutes, definitely faster than a trip to the grocery store. And while other dinner options cost around $10 per serving, Every Plate is offering 5 chef-designed recipes each week from only $4.99 per serving. That's the same price as my morning coffee that I buy every single day. We tried the spicy honey butter chicken with zucchini and roasted sweet potatoes, sausage and pepper orzotto, and the southwestern beef bowl with chipotle crema, pico de gallo, and lime rice. And let me tell you, each meal was super easy to make and really delicious, and it saved us tons of time to keep on researching for this podcast. For 6 free meals across your first 3 weeks and free shipping on your first delivery, go to everyplate.com and enter the promo code CATTLE6. That's everyplate.com and promo code CATTLE6 for 6 free meals across your first 3 weeks and free shipping on your first delivery.
Now back to our story. Detective January and Texas Ranger Cawthon, that we introduced earlier, who's helping on the case, they both decided they were going to travel the 9-hour road trip out west to El Paso. But they didn't go empty-handed. They brought with them that copy of Sam Urich's day planner slash address book along for the ride. It turns out Urich had dozens of contacts in El Paso. It looked like to investigators that this could be one of Urich's underground areas of operation for some of his shadier businesses. Two of the contacts provided some interesting details when questioned. The first, Clark Paulson, was able to verify both Urich and Young had been in El Paso during the time that Gary went missing for this interview. A second informant told investigators that the two spent much of their time at an isolated ranch several miles outside of El Paso to the east, and this was along the Texas-Mexico border. This ranch itself is a massive 600-acre plot of scrubby, rocky West Texas desert land. After investigators located the property, they began doing some initial surveillance, and that's when a hired security guard in a muscle car came flying down a dirt road that led to the ranch and slid up to the investigators and wanted to know what the heck they were doing. Once they started talking to this guy, though, he was surprisingly quite candid with the investigators. He even seemed convinced whatever was going on out there was not legal. This guy had, like, military experience, and he was totally helpful for the investigators. As soon as he found out that one of them was a Texas Ranger, he was like, oh, well, this is what I think's going on.
Oh, okay. That's odd, but okay.
It's kind of awesome,
I guess. Sure.
He told investigators that there was a gate at the southern border of this ranch, which allowed access to and from the property that was also owned by Sam Urich, but on the Mexico side. Imagine an international terrorist slash arms dealer who has a veritable revolving door on the back of his property where he can just slip across the U.S. border into another country. And also, investigators think that this might be how he helped Ted Young evade authorities and escape the country. So while he's talking about that, one of the investigators asked offhandedly if he had ever discovered any bones on the property. He responded, well, yes, sir. I take lots of hikes, and I'm a collector of sorts when it comes to bones. Would you like to see them? I have a whole collection. I thought you would enjoy that, because you're a bone collector yourself.
That would be me, but I am a little nervous as what they're about to find in his bone collection.
So obviously, they said yes, and they were like, oh, we should go and check out what this dude has. And they go to his house, and on closer inspection, Detective January and Sergeant Cawthon found that most of the remains were animal in nature. But then, Ranger Cawthon spotted what appeared to be, to him, a human long bone.
What kind of long bone?
Well, we're going to get into that.
Oh, okay. I have to wait. Okay.
Well, just like a second. Immediately, though, he sent the bone off for analysis, and it would later come back as confirmed being a human bone from a man in his late 30s and an arm bone. Now, it doesn't say whether it was a radius or an ulna, but it was one of those.
Oh, it was a bone of the forearm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was this Gary Patterson? Have they stumbled into the linchpin of this case? We don't know. But meanwhile, back in Waco, investigators begin playing hardball. After discovering that Lisa had violated her parole for a minor offense, they quickly acquired a warrant for her arrest. This seemed like the perfect time to pressure Lisa for further information and likely scare her father out of hiding. The whole way back to the station, detectives are dropping hints left and right, taunting Lisa regarding this arm bone that they found out in El Paso.
Question, are they sending this bone out for further testing, DNA testing or anything like that, or?
Yes, they did try to do that. But remember, it's 1997.
Yeah.
That stuff takes a while.
Okay, so they're still kind of waiting on the results of this test.
Yeah, and in the meantime, they're thinking we can use this as a way to pressure Lisa, especially since she just violated her parole.
Sure.
We can be like, oh, we found some human remains out there.
Yeah.
Well, the whole way back, Lisa is very nervous and stressed out. She's noticeably different than the first time that they interviewed her, where she was stoic and didn't want to cooperate. Well, a few hours later, Lisa, as stressed out as she was ready to talk. She not only laid out a connection between her father and Ted Young to investigators, but revealed a plot to hurt Gary Patterson. Lisa admitted she had known that her father was planning to lure Gary to El Paso. She told investigators that he was just supposed to rough him up and pressure him into returning custody of Crystal back to Lisa. Investigators returned her to jail and refocused their efforts back to the West Texas desert. A search warrant was quickly authorized for the entire ranch property in El Paso. Investigators wanted to locate the rest of these human remains, obviously, and find out if these were in fact Gary. What better way to do that than with, like, a skull and dentition and that kind of thing? Luckily, a literal army of volunteers quickly assembled at the ranch, including hundreds of foot searchers who offered their help from the nearby Fort Bliss. These are like off-duty army guys in their spare time, volunteering to help look for a missing dude out in the desert. Kind of miraculous that it even happened.
Oh, yeah.
They were also able to make use of officers from multiple regions in West Texas, mounted search units, and this is before Texas Equisearch was even founded, but these kinds of mounted searchers are really useful in a region with canyons, arroyos, rattlesnakes everywhere. You know, it's a treacherous area. They also employed cadaver dog teams and a few dozen off-road vehicles. Well, weeks of back-breaking hiking and searching through dangerous terrain were carried out until finally one officer discovered what appeared to be a round rock in a clearing. When he tried to move some of the sand near this round rock, it was very apparent that this was not a rock. It was, in fact, a human skull. The search teams were able to move in quickly and excavate the rest of the skeleton in its entirety, which was buried underneath the sand. Everybody started to have, you know, a relaxed feel about them. They were thinking, we found Gary. This is Gary. We've done it. That was until it was discovered it was not Gary Patterson's body. The remains were matched to those of a missing homeless man from El Paso with no ties to Gary or Sam Urich. It's just some random homeless guy who ended up out in the middle of the desert.
Okay, so he died of natural causes or?
They're not sure.
Okay.
They had been there for a while. He was right about the same age, but they couldn't figure out his cause of death.
Hmm. Well, he was buried, so I mean, that does suggest that he was murdered.
Yeah, but like he didn't have.
Yeah, there's nothing yeah. obvious. If he's completely skeletonized, there might not be anything obvious as to his cause of death.
You're exactly right. And so this basically took the wind completely out of the investigators' sails. And this meant that the searches had to completely start over again from scratch, looking for Gary's body. Well, meanwhile, while these searches are going on, the hunt for Sam Urich continued as well. And 3 weeks later, in Southern California, partnering U.S. Marshals who had been on his tail since the beginning of this case believed that he had been located in a safe house. A federal strike team moved in quickly, and they assembled, and they struck, and they picked him up, and they arrested Sam Urich. They had him in custody. I wish I knew more about how it happened, but the U.S. Marshals have not released that information.
Mm. Okay, but we got him.
We got him.
Okay, good.
So this resulted in him being extradited back to Waco, Texas, and quickly charged with murder and the kidnapping of Gary Patterson. The only problem was, though, without a body, it's going to be really hard to get a conviction, right, Aaron?
Yeah.
And Bill Johnston, the U.S. attorney from the State Department, he knew, working on this case, that they were going to need Ted Young in custody, and they were going to have to interrogate him and pressure him for information. And that was what was going to seal Sam Urich's fate in this case. So, while tracking leads in El Paso, U.S. Marshals and agents from the State Department heard rumors that Ted Young had fled to Honduras, of all places. This is when, shockingly, Sergeant Cawthon and another Texas Ranger, Lieutenant Cleet Buckaloo, and two Secret Service officers headed off for Central America after getting approval from the U.S. State Department to hunt down Ted Young.
I'm sorry. Are we not going to acknowledge that name? Will you repeat it for me, please?
Lieutenant Cleet Buckaloo. I mean, Cleet is such a Texas... Cleet is such a Texas name, right?
What kind of name is Buckaloo?
That's the icing on the cake. That's what puts it over the top.
Okay, we've had a lot of really fantastic names on our show. That takes the cake.
Dude.
That sounds like a cartoon person's name.
What I love about this situation, too, with Sergeant Cawthon and Lieutenant Cleet Buckaloo, is Cleet Buckaloo is a giant dude. And he's very imposing. And he's like the bad cop to the good cop of Cawthon.
Okay. So he would totally kick our asses for making fun of his name.
Oh, yes. And this guy is an American hero, and I love him, and I will give him a hearty handshake if I ever see him.
But what a name.
I will not make fun of his name.
To his face.
Yeah.
Oh, Cleet Buckaloo.
Well, never before had Texas Rangers traveled so far to attempt an arrest. The real catch was that the Honduras government only gave the four men authorization to be in the country for 4 days. That's pretty short order.
Yeah.
And it's a big country, and I don't know if you know much about Honduras, but it's like right smack dab in really rainforesty, crazy geographical location to find someone. It's like finding a needle in a haystack. Well, luckily for the Texas Rangers and the Secret Service officers that went with them, Interpol agents working closely with the U.S. State Department had been tracking Ted Young's activities and movements in Honduras. They had actually tracked the man to a heavily forested coastal region near the city of San Pedro Sula, not too far from the border of Guatemala. So the Rangers and the Secret Service land in the capital city of Tegucigalpa, and they head off for the coastal jungles. Rangers and agents search high and low for Ted Young, but after the first day, the Secret Service agents receive word that a congresswoman was attempting to shut the mission down, claiming overreach and misuse of federal funds. They told the Rangers, Cawthon and Buckaloo, that, quote, "We most likely have maybe a couple of days, I don't know, but if we get pulled off on this thing, you guys are on your own." 3 days pass without a trace. Bill Johnston, back in the United States, he's working his magic to keep Congress from pulling these dudes back out of Honduras, giving them as much time as they can get, and the Rangers and the Secret Service men are just pouring through this countryside, and it's the final day. They still haven't found him. It's getting to the last few hours. It's like late in the afternoon, 3-4 o'clock, and they figured they'd go to one last spot, and they drive by an auto repair shop in the countryside, and Agent Buckaloo spots Ted Young in a pair of coveralls working at this auto repair shop.
Does his coveralls have a patch that says Ted Young on him?
I wish. That would be...
Or maybe it was Ned Fung. Because, you know, he just changed Ted to Ned. Oh. That was his undercover.
Yeah, real smooth. But no, he's just out and about, you know.
Just fixing cars,
yeah. Right. And Cawthon told the Dallas Observer, quote, "I can't describe how I felt at that moment. When I finally saw the man we'd been chasing after 15 months, I wanted to run across that road and just hug him." Miraculously, the Rangers had their man. But before leaving Honduras, Sergeant Cawthon and Lieutenant Buckaloo used the last few hours to interrogate Ted Young that evening. The Texas Rangers told the Kerrville Times the details of the conversation. The first thing Ted said when the Rangers came into the room was, quote, "Who are you guys? Who the hell are you? I'm going to tell you right now that the U.S. government has done nothing but fuck me over all my life. I didn't do a damn thing wrong, and still they want to throw me in prison. It wasn't right, goddammit. Sergeant Cawthon interrupted Young, saying, quote, "Hey, we're not here to talk about South Carolina or the U.S. government. That's all in the past. We're here to talk about Gary Patterson. We're Texas Rangers, Ted." With that, Ted Young sank back into his chair, visually defeated.
Oh, you know your life's over when the Texas Rangers found you in Honduras.
Isn't that badass?
That's really cool.
Well, Rangers Cawthon and Buckaloo began to paint a dire picture for Ted Young, detailing their entire case against him. Going on a limb, they also applied some pressure, stating if he refused to cooperate, there was plenty of corroborating details to try Young for the murder of Gary Patterson. Texas Rangers concluded, saying that they planned to seek the death penalty against both him and Urich, and he better cooperate. Under the mountain of pressure, that's all it took for Ted Young to wilt like a thirsty desert flower. Young told Rangers the following. Urich had been shipping old trucks down to Honduras for Young to scrap and sell. That was his livelihood. He was making a good business at it. One night, Urich appeared, armed and waiting in Young's Honduran home when he returned from work, unannounced. Urich had previously helped Young evade authorities on his corporate fraud charge by assisting him escape the country. Urich felt that Young could repay this debt by helping him with a personal matter, punishing his son-in-law, Gary Patterson. Young went on to tell the Rangers the details of what happened that fateful day on March 3, 1997. Ted Young met Gary Patterson at the El Paso airport, claiming to be Ned Wright. He drove them around town for a while, showing him the city, and then they went out to dinner and had some drinks. After a few more hours, the sun began to set on the desert, and Young suggested they go for a drive out to the development site to retrieve some soil samples. Young said at that point, quote, "As I drove the pickup out into the desert, Gary kept dozing off. I think he had too much to drink. Shortly thereafter, I turned off the main interstate and headed down a dirt road into the desert." A few moments later, Ted Young stopped the truck abruptly. That's when Young said that Sam Urich appeared, as planned, emerging from the pitch-black darkness of the desert night. He jerked the car door open, grabbed Gary, and said, quote, "I've got you now, motherfucker. I told you. I can reach out and I can touch you anywhere. Any goddamn where." Ted Young pulled a gun at this point, kept it trained on Gary while Urich dragged him from the vehicle and tied him up with duct tape. Once Gary was tied up, Urich ordered Young to leave the two alone together and not come back until dawn. Young told investigators as he drove off that he saw Urich holding a large pipe in his hands and yelling something at Gary. Young also supplied the Rangers with a hand-drawn map to where he returned later the next day to help Urich bury Gary's body. Shockingly, it wasn't on the 600-acre ranch that they had spent all of their precious man-hours and resources searching. It was much further out into the desert and in an even more remote area. Ted Young's map was accurate, though. And on August 3, 1998, under a tall, dead desert shrub, placed there as a sort of a grim marker, was some soft, loose sand. Investigators knew that sign. They had located a grave. Quote, "I knew the body was there. We started digging, and we found one. I knew it was Gary Patterson," Detective January said. Quote, "And all I wanted was to absolutely be certain that we did everything as perfect as possible. We didn't want to have another body that wasn't Gary this time. We'd come too far to take any chance at messing something up." It took several hours of meticulous excavation before the body was finally unearthed and taken away to the medical examiner's office. Gary's body was still dressed in the white dress shirt, black jeans, and boots that the investigators knew he was wearing the morning of his trip. After 15 months and assistance from a dozen separate local, state, federal, and international agencies, everything had finally come together. Back at the dig site, Detective January thanked all the volunteers and partnering agency personnel before he excused himself to the privacy of one of his SUVs parked nearby. According to his comments to the Waco Tribune, "That's the first time in January's career as a law enforcement officer that he broke down and began to cry." Once the body arrived at the county medical examiner office, they compared dental records and confirmed that the body did in fact belong to Gary Patterson. They also determined a cause of death. Strangely enough, asphyxiation. Desert sand was found in Gary's lungs and esophagus, suggesting that he had been beaten unconscious with the pipe and then buried alive by Sam Urich and Ted Young. At a press conference later that day, former Assistant U.S. Attorney Bill Johnston told the media in El Paso that Gary Patterson is finally coming home. Quote, "The road has been long. The amount of resources allocated to this case have broken records in the state of Texas. This is a clear example of excellent police work by officers and investigators from multiple agencies. These officers are all heroes, the kind that never give up." Gary's father, D.C. Patterson, told Crime Stories, quote, "Parents are not supposed to bury their children. It's supposed to be the other way around. But it gives us peace that we've been able to bring him home. I just don't know how to feel about it. Everyone worked so long and hard, never gave up to find our Gary. I'm so thankful to everyone involved, but there's still a huge hole in our hearts in the shape of our boy." In September of 1999, Ted Young pled guilty to murder for hire in the case of Gary Patterson, and due to his cooperation with authorities, he's received 20 years in prison on top of his previous sentence for corporate fraud. That's a total of just under 25 years in federal prison. With the amount of evidence in this case, Sam Urich also pled guilty to avoid the death penalty. In return, he received a life sentence in federal max security prison with no chance of parole. He signed a statement admitting to beating Gary Patterson repeatedly with a pipe before burying him with Young the following day. However, for some reason, he refused to acknowledge that he had likely buried Gary while he was still breathing, despite the coroner's findings. Lisa Urich received a 3-year sentence, which was added to her 2 years of broken probation time for a total of 5 years for obstructing justice. It wasn't until months after Gary went missing that his parents recalled Lisa phoning them and asking for a photograph of Gary. Investigators believe this photo was transferred to Ted Young to identify him at Brazos Environmental. Gary's parents retained legal guardianship of Crystal, who was then 9 years old. Bill Johnston resigned his position as assistant U.S. attorney after being the target of national controversy upon learning that the Justice Department officials had not divulged critical evidence that the FBI had fired pyrotechnic tear gas grenades into the Branch Davidian compound during the 1993 standoff. He wrote a letter to then Attorney General Janet Reno alerting her of this matter, but many believe that Bill Johnston became an unfortunate scapegoat in that case, which resulted in him exiting his federal service. He currently still operates a private practice in Waco, Texas, and has worked on some really critical cases in state history. I would suggest you go check out Bill Johnston's website. He's got a really, really impressive resume on his website. Texas Ranger Matt Cawthon somehow managed to hold on to that pistol that Ted Young pointed at Gary Patterson that fateful night, and he told the Dallas Observer he's not a collector, but he simply keeps it on his shelf in his office as a reminder. And that, my friends, is the story of the disappearance in the desert, the murder of Gary Patterson.
Wow. Yeah, that was a tale. That was all windy and loopy. That was really interesting. I have a couple of follow-up questions. Do we understand why the initial plan was to try to get Gary Patterson to Florida?
I'm guessing it's because Ted Young was from Florida, and maybe he was in Florida at the time. And I've heard that idea thrown around in some of the research, and that maybe they moved his base of operation to El Paso, which would have been easier for deciding to kill him and get rid of his body out in the desert. But it seems like they had an original plan that involved Florida somehow, but nobody really knows what that was.
Hmm. And this whole thing was...
It was over a custody battle.
I mean, yeah, that's all it was, right? It was basically just he was angry that Lisa lost custody and he wanted to punish Gary.
Yeah.
And hey, if Gary's dead, then Lisa's automatically going to get custody.
Yeah. And I also think that he was, you know, such a sociopath, and he's a terrorist and a weapons dealer internationally. You saw how he treated Detective January early in the investigation.
Yeah.
He thinks he's untouchable. He thinks he can do anything. And this is just like him taking it to the nth degree with Gary in his personal life.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And that's so incredibly sad, too, for the little girl, Crystal, who's just a baby at this time, to know that her father was murdered by her grandfather and her mother's mixed up in all of this. And That's so tremendously sad that she has to grow up without her father and knowing that her family was involved and took part in it.
Luckily for her, DC and his wife, her other grandparents, really, really love her and have given her everything she needs and by all accounts have just been great and supportive. But yeah, it's a huge loss on her part.
Yeah. Well, that's good that she at least had family, though, who could take her in. And, and it's Gary's parents, so they can, you know, tell her all about Gary and she can still kind of feel close to him that way.
Yeah.
So I guess that's really good. But man, that's sad. Man, that guy, I am really glad that he is in prison forever because he sounds like not just like a crazy sociopath. I mean, that's obvious, but the whole terrorism angle and everything. I mean, he needs to be put away.
Oh, he was definitely a public enemy for sure. A world enemy when it comes down to it. I mean, how many people did he hurt with that C4 transaction?
Yeah, exactly. So this is definitely a thing where it's like the world is better with him not in it.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So he can't hurt any more people. And well, that was fascinating.
Yeah. And I've also heard that it's no longer legal to have a revolving door situation on your property's border with Mexico.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I've also heard that like people do it, but it's not necessarily legal. So I don't know. But man, I'd never even considered that possibility. If you were an international crime lord, well, I'm just going to get a ranch out on the border of another country and buy the property on the other side.
Yeah, makes sense.
I'll have somebody meet me there with a car, you know, take off.
This is why we're poor.
Yeah, we don't live in these circles. We don't understand how these people do these things.
No.
We have a hard time paying our taxes every year.
I don't even want to think about it. It's February. We haven't even thought about it yet. Yeah. Oh, awful.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that.
I did. And now I have a very sweet good news story, and it involves animals, which is my favorite kind of good news story.
That's what I need right now.
Okay, good.
All right. Well, we'll be right.
I gotcha.
We'll be right back after this.
This year, make health and wellness a top priority with the help of Care Of, a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door. Whether you're focused on glowing skin, getting more sleep, or generally being more healthy, Care Of helps you build a vitamin routine that's made just for you and your health goals. Now, it can be really hard to know what vitamins and supplements you need, but Care Of makes it so easy. Just go to takecareof.com and take their fun online quiz. It'll ask you about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle choices, and it'll give you your personal, scientifically backed vitamin and supplement recommendations. I took the quiz. It only takes about 5 minutes, and it really helps you isolate what your goals are. Personally, I'm always looking for an extra boost of energy, so I was recommended a daily dose of vitamin B12. Care Of will deliver your subscription box right to your door every month with personalized daily packs, perfect for a busy life on the go lifestyle. And best of all, a portion of every sale goes toward the Good Plus Foundation, which provides expectant mothers in need with valuable prenatal vitamins. And right now, you can take advantage of this month's special New Year offer. For 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, go to takecareof.com and enter CATTLE50. That's takecareof.com. and enter promo code CATTLE50 for 50% off your first month. Well, this good news story is from ABC 13 and comes to us from Southeast Houston. So, there's a guy who kind of just wanted to find a place where he could surreptitiously smoke some marijuana. So he's kind of wandering around and he comes across an abandoned house. And he's like, perfect. I'm going to go inside and I'm going to smoke up. So he gets into the house and what do you think he finds? And just in the realm of possibility, name the most bizarre thing you'd think you would find in an abandoned house.
Let's see. Maybe like some meth heads or, you know, maybe like a drug deal going down. It's like an abandoned house, so I'm guessing like there's plywood on the windows or something. I don't know, a ghost?
Well, what he actually found was probably scarier than a ghost. He found a 350-pound tiger.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, God, this is my worst nightmare. I never want to be face-to-face with a big cat.
This tiger was locked inside a small cage, seemingly abandoned like the rest of the house.
Oh, thank God it's in a cage.
So the guy calls Houston's service line to report, "Hey, I was just trying to smoke some weed and I happened to find a tiger."
Why do you have to tell him you're going to smoke weed? Why can't you just say, "Hey, there's an abandoned tiger in this abandoned house"?
Well, obviously this caused some issues because they had to go back and forth a little, like probing whether or not he was already high and he was having some kind of hallucination. And that's why he was reporting this.
You know what happened? He went ahead and smoked up and like was high with that tiger for a little while. Like he just sat there and looked at that tiger for a little while.
Well, apparently they figured out he wasn't actually high. He was making a legitimate call about this tiger. And so the Livestock Animal Cruelty Unit, a division of the Houston Police Department, was called to the scene. Now, apparently, and I didn't know this, it's completely legal in the state of Texas to own a tiger. And Texas indeed has very little regulation on owning many different exotic animals.
Yeah, I've heard Texas and Florida have some of the loosest exotic animal laws in the country, and that sucks.
Yeah. Well, it's now a completely new thing we all have to worry about. Like, here I am worrying about murder and crime and all this, and now I have to worry about loose tigers.
Could you imagine if one of our neighbors just had a loose tiger?
Jeez. However, it is illegal to own them in the city of Houston, where this occurs. So it's legal in Texas, but I guess it's up to cities to put...
It's probably more common in the country.
Probably. I would say that maybe we need to look at those regulations and maybe outlaw it outright, because nobody should own a tiger. Like, no individual person in a house should own a tiger.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they just saw The Hangover and saw that Mike Tyson had a tiger, and they were like, "That's a good idea. I should have one."
Some moron. Yeah. Well, the tiger was transferred to an animal shelter, and then later was transported to the Cleveland Amory Black Beauty Ranch in Murchison in Henderson County in East Texas.
Did they say how big this tiger was? Is it like a little tiger?
350 pounds. It's a full-grown.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's a full-grown tiger. So this is a large animal sanctuary that's been in operation since 1979 and is named after its founder, author and animal rights activist Cleveland Amory.
Oh, cool.
According to the sanctuary's website, it has over 1,400 acres of land and houses over 800 animals such as cows, pigs, horses, big cats, antelope, monkeys, and apes, many of whom were rescued from slaughterhouses, research labs, and game hunting ranches, as well as things like bad zoos or the exotic pet trade. This tiger will have his own 3-acre habitat, and it's really special because they think there's a good chance that he's never even seen grass or been outside before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's just been stuck in that cage?
Most likely.
Ah, it's horrible.
He is reportedly doing well and is shockingly in pretty good health. And he tolerated the move as best that you can hope for. Obviously, he's moving from Houston to Murchison, so this whole transport thing was a big hassle for everyone involved, but he tolerated the whole thing well.
Oh, well, that's good.
So the sanctuary is still working on getting everything together to get the legal rights to keep him. I'm not sure why, if they're still trying to track down the owner or what's going on with that, but they do expect that this will be his forever home. So we can definitely say that this tiger will be doing well from here on out.
That is great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Did it have a name?
Not that I know of. I tried to look at it, but I don't think they've named him yet. This just happened like within the last week or two.
It's
very recent.
That raises a whole nother question, though. How do you abandon a home and just leave a tiger?
It is a really good question, and I can't figure out more information about that aspect, because from what I read, the house looked like it had been abandoned for some time, but the tiger had meat in its cage or like next to its cage or something. So I don't know if maybe somebody was coming back and feeding the tiger, or maybe they just left a big pile of meat behind when they moved out. I don't know. And I think that they're still trying to track down who it was, because obviously there's animal neglect charges and the fines against owning a tiger in the city of Houston. Both of those things this person can be charged with. So I think they're still trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
They don't know who it is yet.
And you're not going to probably get someone to welcome coming forward and get charged with those crimes. But I also imagine a giant tiger in a cage is a really hard thing to move.
Yeah.
How do you do that? I mean, it's going to get you with claws, right? It's going to come out of the cage and get you.
Exactly. Which is one of the thousands of reasons why you shouldn't own a tiger.
That's a good point.
But one other thing about the Cleveland Amory Black Beauty Ranch, so this is the new home of this tiger, It is a sanctuary and not a zoo, but they do have special times that you can actually go in and take guided tours of the facility and see all of the animals. And all proceeds obviously go back to the sanctuary. They also accept volunteers and donations as well. And that seems like such a fantastic cause. I love animal sanctuaries. They do such good work. Yeah. For more information, you can go to www.funforanimals.org/blackbeauty. And you can find all the information there about that animal sanctuary. And thank you, Animal Sanctuary, Cleveland Amory Black Beauty Ranch, for, you know, going the extra mile and stepping up and saying, we'll go ahead and take this animal in and give him a happy life.
Yeah, that's a great story. We love animals, and animal sanctuaries hit us really in the heartstrings
when
we hear those stories. There is one north of town from where we live that's really cool that has tigers. I think they have like a jaguar, and then they also have some bears that are there.
And there's another one north of us that it's just that whole big wolf sanctuary that we've wanted to go to as well.
Oh, yeah, there is a wolf sanctuary, yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a few in this area. Go and look up animal sanctuaries in your area. They're great places to give your money to.
Oh, yeah.
Because they do such good work. They really help, you know, the helpless as far as these animals that have been abused or neglected for all of their lives, and they give them a second chance at life. And it's just beautiful.
That's definitely true. And I think when you go to those places, I've heard you have much more rewarding experiences, like with the animals and the people that are helping work with the animals, than you do at just going to a zoo.
100%. I would believe
and
that.
And I think that's probably like dollars better well spent going to the sanctuaries. So, yeah, do that. What a great story. Thank you.
Yeah. It started off sad. A lot of our stories do. But, you know, this tiger now has 3 acres to, you know, hang about. And the sanctuary has 2 other tigers as well.
Oh, cool.
So maybe he can find a mate or something. I don't know if they allow them to mate at a sanctuary, but maybe he could get a look.
No, that's a good story. And I feel like you succeeded in lifting our hearts back up.
I'm glad. That's what I'm here for.
All right.
Hey guys, we have a very special podcast recommendation for you this week.
We sure do.
It comes from our friend Lainey, who hosts the True Crime Fan Club podcast, and who is, of course, a friend of ours, and who's going to be at our wonderful meetup coming up next month, which we're very excited about. And she is hosting a new podcast from Parcast, which Parcast does a bunch of really awesome true crime shows.
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah, and it's called Crimes of Passion. And so basically the tagline for the show is where true love meets true crime. So it's all about like the psychology of people who fall in love and then end up killing for their partner or killing their partner. Or if it's about 2 best friends who get into some dire straits.
I think she also covers couples that kill together.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. I'm interested.
Yeah, it's all about relationships and what kind of, I think, drives people to kill. So it should be a really interesting show. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, and you know, Lainey's doing it, so that means it's going to sound awesome. She has a great voice, and she produces the crap out of her episodes and her shows, so it's going to be great.
Yes, and it just dropped today, which means that it should be out by the time you guys listen to this. I think they dropped like the first couple of episodes or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play.
Yeah, get on it.
So go check it out. Should be good stuff.
Yeah, and here's her trailer right here.
Love happens suddenly. Maybe it's a new boyfriend who infatuates you, or an adopted child you adore. A close friend you soon realize you can't live without. Suddenly, they're everything. Suddenly, you would kill for them, or they would kill for you. Suddenly, one of you is a criminal. I'm Lainey, and every week on Parcast's new podcast, Crimes of Passion, we tell true stories of relationships that turn dangerous. Our subjects might start as lovers, friends, or family, but by the end, there's a criminal and a victim. Along the way, we analyze the relationship dynamics and psychology that lead to violence, theft, and even murder. Crimes of Passion premieres February 20th with new episodes every Wednesday. Crimes of Passion is part of the Parcast Network and a production of Cutler Media. Crimes of Passion, the podcast where true love meets true crime.
Well, we don't really have anything else.
No, we don't have anything else to do anymore. This is our new show format. We don't have to read iTunes reviews. I mean, we've had a couple of good ones. Maybe we'll read them in the future. But it's been a long episode. And I think we've done yeoman's work today.
I think so, too, my love.
Oh.
Yeah, well, we will see you guys all next week. Same time, same place.
Yeah, let me also throw a little shout out there for our March 30th event at the Yard. It's a beer garden, dog park, venue. It's going to be amazing. Our canine crime unit's going to be there. Swindled, I've heard, is bringing the concerned pupper.
The concerned canine.
Oh, the concerned canine. That's it.
Or a concerned canine.
A concerned canine down from Austin. Yeah, it's going to be a really great event. Southern Fried True Crime, Gone Cold, True Crime Fan Club, Nowhere Dispatch, Lone Star Law and Disorder, Thrift Therapy, Chatty Crafties, Nerds from the Crypt. All those shows have signed on, and it's going to be a huge event. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of people have already said they're going to come, like over 100 people, which is awesome. So let's break the fire code on this place.
Yeah, and remember, if you need more information, you can go to the Facebook page. If you go to our Facebook page, you can find the link to that. It should be our pinned post right now.
You can find us on Twitter at ACNC Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at All Crime No Cattle. You can email us at allcrimenocattle@gmail.com, as always. You can find our Patreon page by searching All Crime No Cattle there. We have a threadless shop where you can get all your merch. We've got some leggings, some shoes, some bags, some stickers, mugs, t-shirts, everything you could ever want, really.
That's right. That's right.
And I think with that, I'm going to go to sleep.
But after you make me dinner.
Okay. Good thing I like making dinner. That's my jam. Well, all right, you guys. We'll catch up with you on the flip side. Ain't no shame, ladies, do your thing. Just make sure you're ahead of the game. And always remember, the crime is bigger in Texas, y'all. Adios.
Bye.